It's time to get organized with Dr. Craig and Citizen Action. Working for democracy and taking on economic, racial, and environmental issues across Wisconsin and around the United States, here's Earl Ingram with Dr. Robert Craig.
Welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram. You know, no matter how, you know, things supposedly change in a society, they often remain the same. And yeah, I'm so happy to have my friend and longtime guest and contributor to whatever program it is that I'm on, you know, Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. I want to say good morning to you as always, my friend. You're always there. How you doing?
I'm good. Snowy weather. Looks like winter this winter.
I'm
good under the circumstances.
You know, as I was coming into Racine this morning, you know, Dr. Craig, people have to understand when you have the kind of weather that we just had, you got to be careful when you're driving, man. You can't do 65, 70 on streets, and you don't know what's under the pavement. You don't have any idea how the pavement is. It's just, I don't understand why people aren't. Maybe it's Dr. Craig. I'm an old fogey, or whatever it is, but. Man, you just got to take it easy, right? You know, I mean, all it takes is one slip up, especially when you're on the expressway.
There's just a lot of irresponsibility in driving when you're driving a large, you know, vehicles that are a couple tons, and yeah, I mean, it's a minority of people, Earl, but it's dangerous. The number of traffic deaths we have is outrageous. In fact, it's embarrassing to note the research shows that the autonomous cars are much safer than human drivers. And it would save 60,000 lives a year if we went totally to autonomous cars, which is on the horizon. But I'll tell you this, Earl, I got my master's at University of Georgia. And I remember one time there was half an inch of snow. And I was like, I'm not staying home on half an inch of snow. Well, I found out the danger was not the snow. It was the Southern drivers on the snow, Earl. It was unbelievable. And people were spinning out all over the medians and creening into each other like bumper cars. So it could be worse.
yeah, it could. You know, Dr. Craig, you and I, we can talk about a plethora of things, and we have over the years and continue to do that. And I love you for your openness and willing to have conversations that a lot of people aren't willing to have. And, you know, I wanted to begin our conversation this morning, as you're an organizer, you organize people and you get people to understand just how important it is to organize and, you know, to not be victims. And so if you don't make an effort to push back on things, it's easy to become a victim in a society that, unfortunately, it's not fair and balanced, and that's kind of what the world is. And if you try to take this on by yourself, the chances are you're not going to be very victorious, and your life is going to be pretty miserable. But if you move around and you get with like-minded people, we can make some changes in the way things are. Is it safe to say that?
Oh, absolutely. It's historically demonstrated. And in fact, it's the only way, Earl. And I think we moved in our society in the 20th century towards a hyper-individualism, where people would just, okay, I make my vote, I call my legislator, and then that's my role in politics. That does a little bit of influence in that. If enough people do on an issue, it might influence, say, your city council member, or your mayor. But it's not where power is. There's another problem that a lot of liberals have an aversion to power because we focus on the abuses of power. And of course, that's pretty darn easy to focus on, not only all the time, but especially right now with what's going on in our news feeds, right? But the only anecdote to that kind of negative power based on division and hate is love and positive power, and that power requires people standing together and operating in groups. It was a group activity to take down a king at the founding of this country. It was a group activity to take down slavery, right? It was a group activity to make all the great advances, such as Social Security and Medicare and civil rights and voting rights of the 20th century, just to name a few. I think people kind of thought they'd take for granted. We have a democracy, we'll always have a democracy. It'll always work a certain way. And that's not true. In fact, it requires people to be involved and together and build what is the power of community. But that power is overwhelming when there are enough people doing it. And I don't just say that as some article of faith, Earl. There's political science research that shows, very, very well regarded, that there's no oppressive regime in the world that has stood up to 3.5% of their population being actively against them and organized and out on the streets peacefully.
3.5%. That's
a lot of people, because yeah. Nation of over 200 million people, but it's not everyone. You don't have to worry about your crazy uncle from Thanksgiving dinners, right? You're going to get the uncle, okay?
Right.
And we need to be in relation with people and push in the same direction. And since 3.5% overthrows the most repressive regime, the most violent regime, right? And that tells you even less, you need even less to move, say, the state legislature to actually guarantee people access to health care and child care and fund our public schools and the other things that we so desperately need. So 3.5 is to do the hardest thing. And so you see the problem here for Donald Trump, because enough people are organized in Minneapolis and he won't give in, because authoritarians have to show they're in charge and exercise power. Part of authoritarianism is the exercise of power and the creation of fear, so people pull back and don't come together, right? And stay in the inside and cower in fear. And his only answer, since he can't capitulate because that makes him not be authoritarian, right? That shows his weakness. He just keeps sending more and more ICE agents into Minneapolis. But that's why they were so mad at the woman that was killed, is not because she was a danger to those ICE agents, but because it's really annoying them how effective these grassroots people just coming together and blowing their whistles and pointing and filming everything and pointing out what's happening and bearing witness, how effective that is as they try to just racially profile and pick people up with no warrants and no basis whatsoever in order to fulfill a right-wing fantasy that we're going to save the country by kidnapping grandma and mom and dad.
You know, Dr. Craig, you watch these videos, and the one thing that's different about our nation than others, and you watch the unrest is going on in Iran, and they aren't allowed, for the most part, to shoot those videos. But one thing that, you know, in common with both of these is we can't talk about, even though we keep talking about the unrest going on in Iran, you can't not talk about what's going on in our nation. Because you kind of come to expect unrest in somebody else's nation, Dr. Craig, but I don't think Americans really ever envision, men in masks and fatigues snatching women out of their cars. I mean, And being filmed, Dr. Craig, and physically manhandling them. I mean, even if you agree that there's some problems with the immigration system in this nation, and even if you supported, Donald Trump, and we got to get immigration under control, how can you push yourself to say, okay, it's okay that they manhandle women and take children and bust into private buildings and businesses, Dr. Craig, you're watching this and you're saying, my God, how long are we going to allow this to take place? And then not only how long are we going to allow it to take place, but now that it's moving in that direction, Dr. Craig, how do we turn that around?
I mean, and you know, you have the staking out of the schools. We could go on and on,
right?
Well, it's very interesting how oppression is revealed, and it changes over time with technology and with changes in society, right? So in the antebellum, before the Civil War in the 19th century period, there weren't pictures of how bad slavery was, right? You didn't have that. So it ended up being eyewitness reports and people escaping, like Frederick Douglass and many others, less known than Frederick Douglass, and bearing witness, and people like there were some Southern women like the Grimke sisters that turned against slavery and became Northern anti-slavery activists, but could tell people chapter and verse what was happening on plantations, right? And so, but you had to like emotionally, morally awake people, right? We know that photography changed wars, starting with the Civil War, right? Once you could actually see a war, you couldn't make it the glorious romantic thing as easily that it had been. And we know that a huge influence on both the Civil War and on the Vietnam War, especially, but others as well. But this evolution of the smart camera, everyone having a camera in their pocket, right, and being able to film what is going on, it energized the Black Lives Matter movement, because in previous eras, they could just lie as to what happened about George Floyd, and there would have been a couple of witnesses that disagreed, and people wouldn't know what to make of it. They'd probably believe officials, right? But they couldn't lie as to what was on video. The striking thing about what just happened in Minneapolis last week, Earl, is after the absolutely damning videos were already out there, right? You have Kristi Noem and J.D. Vance and Donald Trump just looking straight into the camera and lying about what everyone could plainly see. And so it's amazing how more effective that is in debunking them and revealing who they are than all the other lies that are factual lies that we can, you and I, Earl, can give all the data and statistics and evidence that says that they're lying about a lot of other things. But it isn't like, well, you can just see it. It's a lie, right? They're just making it up. And then we just had the latest escalation where we had longtime prosecutors in the U.S. District Attorney's Office in Minneapolis resign because they'd asked not to investigate the officer who killed a woman. They were asked to investigate the woman and her partner, or the widow, right?
Yes.
I mean, it was unbelievable. So this is an opportunity, but this doesn't mean, I just want to, because you brought up the point of organizing, doesn't mean we're going to win. It means there's an opportunity to inspire more people to come together and take effective action, because they're going to keep doing this as long as they have the power, and they're going to have the power fully, at least until 2027, if they lose the midterm elections. Even then, they'll still have the presidency for two more years. We're going to have to keep fighting this, and there is a real risk that they will try to steal the 2026 election and certainly the 2028 election. So we're in a situation where we have a very dangerous threat, and it's holding power in our government, and it has access to a tremendous amount of guns and ammunition. Massive ICE funding came out of the big ugly bill. Have you seen the ads on football games?
Yes. All?
The strange fascist ads are trying to recruit people to join ICE.
Dr. Craig, this is, and here's what people need to understand. I know that a lot of people don't, they get tired of hearing this conversation in this country, and they want to accentuate the positive. But you cannot look at what is going on, and unless you shut your mind completely off, the magnitude of what is going on in this country is almost unprecedented. And you just stated this is not going to change overnight, even if by the Democrats win the House and the Senate, you know, in the midterms, you know, a tall order, they still got the president there, and there's still going to be these changes that have been made. And you know, Dr. Craig, I don't know. I really don't know if I'm watching where our nation is headed, and I'm watching it, and I'm not watching it, Dr. Craig, with, you know, a melancholy way of looking at it. I'm wondering, how are we going to get out of this? It's in the early stages. Dr. Craig, pulling a disabled woman out of her car, snatching her through the car door, open the car door, pull her out, treat her as if she's a rag doll, not knowing she's disabled, and they jump on her like predators, and they rough her up. And this is going on all over this nation, Dr. Craig, and not enough people are angry enough to say, whoa, hold it. That's a woman. That's not some gang member. That's not some person nondescript. She's a woman, Dr. Craig. She's offering no threat to anybody.
I'll offer some positive, Earl. There's a lot of negative to focus on.
Right.
One positive is what you just did right there in your description. People are seeing it. They're very unpopular, right?
And yes.
We have, in other countries like Turkey and like Hungary, the dictator is very popular, is actually not so there. It's not succeeding at that level, but they still have so much power that's still a threat. And I think complacency or just cynicism, it's nothing to do with me, I can step aside, is part of the problem here, because it's sort of like, let's say you have a really good football team and you've won the Super Bowl. Well, guess what? It's going to be just as hard to win the next Super Bowl. And democracy is the same way. People kind of took their foot off the pedal and they have to worry about maintaining our democracy. This is what happens when you do that. But the positive, Earl, is people seeing it, all of the things people are willing to do, right? All of the people on the streets. That is all happening in different places, Los Angeles, Chicago, right? And Minneapolis, of course, and all of the people and everywhere else, like in Wisconsin, that have come out for protests as well to support our brothers and sisters in Minnesota. That's a positive. I'll give you a second positive, Earl. Look, our democracy was badly broken before Donald Trump came down the golden elevator. Okay. During that financial collapse of 2008-2009, where the banks in their greed blew up the economy and stole wealth from millions of homeowners, especially, but not exclusively Black and brown homeowners, and 10 million people got foreclosed on their homes, right? Our Democratic government at that point, big D, bailed out the banks and not the people. And Black homeownership still hasn't recovered from the damage that was done. So it threw out all the progress that had been made since the civil rights era, and we haven't gotten back. So what this does is, this crisis, even though it's dangerous to have a would-be dictator in the White House and doing all the dictator things, and he's gone full. I mean, you know, Earl, that the one of the main critiques of calling Trump a fascist by scholars in that field was that he wasn't an international imperialist. Well, we can check that box now. So it's pretty funny. A lot of the scholars who denied he was a fascist and said the word shouldn't be used have now come, okay, I guess he is. But that's not whether how we label him is not the point. But the point is, there's an opportunity, Earl, to rebuild our democracy and make it actually deliver for people. And one of the reasons that Donald Trump could get power is because democracy stopped delivering for people, and neither party actually served most people's greatest needs. And so here's the trap, though, because affordability is the big issue, world, right? Democrats are sure, and all their consultants, that they're going to win on affordability. And you hear the cat age, affordability, 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 right? But there's a huge difference between candidates who are running on actual reforms that would actually make things affordable, people give them health care, give them child care, right? Deal with wages, because this is wages as well as the cost of things driven by monopolies that have deliberately been allowed to take over our economy by both political parties, and then wage also suppressed as well. I told you in the last podcast that according to the Rand Corporation, if we had the same distribution of income as we had in 1975, now each wage earner would make $28,000 more a year. You know, you can afford a lot of groceries for that, right? And a lot of utility bills for that. So this is an opportunity, as dark as it is, for us to fix all that. But we need Democratic leaders who will run on real reforms and then actually deliver for people. Because Trump's in trouble because he promised affordability and then did nothing about it at all because it wasn't, he just lied to people to get power, right? If you just run on talking points and small little solution act programs that won't really fix anything and just leave the system as it is, then you will be blamed the next time and democracy will be lost, even if we hold off Donald Trump. So there's a huge opportunity here to do this right and reinvent American democracy, which means not only it we have fair elections and we have equal justice in the law, it also means that it delivers for the working class and the middle class, Earl.
You know, Dr. Craig, I want to move on to an article that you pointed out to me this morning in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and it's 50 years after court order on desegregation in Milwaukee public schools. What's changed? Milwaukee public schools now, somewhere around, you know, only 9% or less white. The rest of it is minority. And probably that's a pretty amazing statistic to me, Dr. Craig. I went to Milwaukee Public Schools in the early 1960s, and I went to an all-black grade school because back during those days, there wasn't busing and there wasn't open housing, and so blacks lived in certain areas. That's the way it was. And so you went to the school in the community where you lived, and the community where I lived, it was all black. And somewhere around 65, somewhere around there, I graduated in from grade school, and busing came into vogue, and so I went from an all black grade school to a 98% white middle school. I was bused into that area. My class, not just my school, but my graduating class at that point in time, those of us who were that age, wound up being the first group to be bused. So I went from an all-black reality to an all-white reality. And then on to a 95% white high school. And so things were changing, Dr. Craig. They were addressing the segregated reality that was Milwaukee in the 50s and 60s. And because of Dr. Martin Luther King and all of those who fought segregation and fought for integration, well, some of that started happening in my lifetime as a young boy and as I grew up. And so I'm still engaged in Milwaukee public schools. I volunteer my time 3 to 4 days a week now, talking with young children, and I can't help but see the same thing that I saw when I went to school from kindergarten through sixth grade, all black schools, zero whites in the schools at all. Dr. Craig. And can you, I don't know how we've gotten, we never did overcome all of that in the first place, but there was some movement, but now it's backtracked to as if 60 years ago, 50, 60 years ago, never happened. Why is that not an issue in our nation, Dr. Craig? Is it because we need another Dr. Martin Luther King? Or is it that we as a nation have basically backtracked on civil rights, on what is right and proper in a society?
Well,
I know I said a mouthful.
To the need of, for another Martin Luther King, I go back to how you started the show, Earl. There's a vision of the civil rights movement as Martin Luther King gave some eloquent speeches and people marched around and we got voting rights and civil rights. And it was hard organizing and a lot of people took a lot of risks. A lot of people were killed in Mississippi and Alabama. A lot of young organizers you've never heard of, mostly black organizers, did it and did real organizing. So that is how the change occurred. It needed a Martin Luther King to express the movement and to speak to a large audience. But he's sitting there in 1920 with no movement. He's just he was completely ignored if he was a previous generation. Happenstance to have that brilliant and that moral a leader as Martin Luther King Jr. That was essential, but other things had to come first. So there's always this kind of, you know, people lose, reform loses momentum, people turn to other things, right? All of the momentum of the 50s and 60s and 70s, but we got to return to it, right?
The
whole period of the 1980s forward was a stepping back and a return from the advances, right? And the giving of power to billionaires and the wealthy people to turn away from these social goals. And that leads to horrible results because Brown versus Board of Education is still correct that separate but equal is inherently unequal. And so you have horrendous racial inequality and you can have all of your judgments you want. I think they're unfair of low-income people, right? And blame them. You can't, how do you blame the kids? How do you blame what family you were born into, and why should you have so much less opportunity than other kids who happen to be born into other families and other communities and of other races? And so it's fundamentally un-American, unethical, but it requires much more courageous leaders because it is politically divisive, because it's hard, and ultimately requires organized people to push and to elect leaders and to push leaders and force them. Lyndon Baines Johnson gets a lot of credit for the Civil Rights Act, and he did bring brilliant legislative craftsmanship to it, and he did at his core believe in it. He still had to be pushed because there were all the other political incentives, and he was pushed hard by Martin Luther King and the rest of the civil rights movement. And so we need to return to this, and I'll say something that, and by the way, most politicians of either party will not do a hard thing unless they're pushed, unless we elect people willing to do it, we're motivated. But I'll say something that's never said, Earl. Maybe it's said more, maybe it's said in your circles, Earl, right?
Yes.
We're still, and the Journal Sentinel article is excellent, but we're still acting like we should just have desegregation in Milwaukee when only 9% of the students are white now. So there's a limit to how much desegregation you can do in the Milwaukee public schools. Based, it is a supermajority African-American and Latino school district, but we are these divisions between the suburbs and the city are artificial. We're in one economy, right? We're in one state, and this is where the white people went. They didn't leave Milwaukee. They went out to the suburbs. So to really have desegregation, you need to do it region-wide, the whole Milwaukee metro area, if we're serious. And we need to have the guts to take that on, actually, and to make sure. Currently, we have the most privileged kids, more predominantly white, having much more spent on them, much better facilities, much better paid teachers, much better everything, right, than the kids who are most in need in the city of Milwaukee. It's an abomination.
You know, Dr. Craig, it is nonsensical if you think about it, because these children grow up to be adults. To become adults, And if they're not getting a fair opportunity in at the time that they are children, you're going to have to reckon with them once they become adults. The world is changing. The technological advancement of this world is starting to even make it more difficult for even privileged white kids if they're not prepared to succeed in it. But my God, Dr. Craig, as I volunteer my time in the schools, something I've been doing, by the way, for almost the last 15 years. I'm not a Johnny come lately to this. I see what has been taking place. I know the outcome of seeing children in grade school who come to school bright-eyed, Dr. Craig, just like their white counterparts in the suburbs. And they come prepared to learn. And they want to learn. But yet they are faced with some insurmountable odds. How is it beneficial to a nation when the sheer numbers of young people we're talking about are just being completely shut out of opportunities in this country? And if they're not educated, it's pretty safe to say, Dr. Craig, where I worked for 34 years, that opportunity is not there anymore. It's never coming back. And so as I was talking with young people on yesterday, and, you know, some of them, I think these were 8th, 9th, and 10th graders, and we were talking about the importance of education. Well, you know, a lot of those young people, Dr. Craig, have dropped out already. In Milwaukee Public Schools, there are kids who, by the time they get to through grade school, Dr. Craig, they've already dropped out of school. And then from middle school to high school, there's no chance. And so now they become adults and they're out in a society, Dr. Craig, that demands that you have some form of higher education, especially in a technological global society, to have any chance at life. Well, we're graduating and pushing kids out by the tens of thousands, Dr. Craig. And so what does a society like ours think is going to happen if you continue to push that many young people out into, again, a global technological society with no hope? Well, we need more police. This is the cry, Dr. Craig. We need more police. There are criminals in the street. Well, how many police do you think is going to take? It's nonsensical, Dr. Craig, and especially going back to when the civil rights era that I grew up in, where at least when I was in that all-black school, Dr. Craig, I'll tell you, I got a great education, okay? Because the teachers at that time lived in the same community that I lived in, okay? And so I'm not saying teachers don't care, but they don't live in the same neighborhoods, Dr. Craig. They live in, it used to be that they had to live in the city of Milwaukee. They no longer have to live there anymore. So they don't have to be a part of, though. There's a whole litany of things that make this such a unbearable situation, Dr. Craig. This article that just came out in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is a clarion call, Dr. Craig. It's not just for it to be written. People need to inculcate what is said there and then do something about it.
So I think what you just laid out, that was really good, Earl. And just all the personal experience involved in it, your own testimony. Look, we need a movement, leaders, a democracy that takes seriously trying to actually achieve the highest aspirations of American society, and not to just say the system just is what it is, nothing could be done, right? We're just going to keep it going, patch it together. Sorry, all we could get is this small increase in school funding, which is actually a decrease. That's all we could do in Madison this cycle, right? So I think, you know, some will say to the to school desegregation and segregation that busing doesn't work really well in busing people long distances. And I talked about inner city busing. So busing people, kids, an hour out to Oconomowoc wouldn't be the thing to do, right? And it's really housing segregation. Well, that was caused first by deliberate redlining, but now we still have it because of zoning. And so, yes, we've advanced to the point where Black doctors and lawyers and corporate executives can live in Brookfield, live in Oconomowoc, right? But neither lower income whites and Blacks, and of course, Blacks are disproportionately lower income, cannot because of all the zoning and because of the cost of things. So we essentially, so then, okay, you think that we're going to solve it by housing, then let's deal with housing segregation and do it structurally, right? The promise of a new democracy is to actually get a movement that is committed after defeating Donald Trump to fixing these things. And there are a lot of things for us to consider, Earl. I mean, the frame of the article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, our conversation so far has been that the solution is desegregating the schools, right? There is a legitimate critique of that. You ever read, or do you know of Derrick Bell?
Yes.
So Derrick Bell, the founder of critical race theory.
Absolutely.
Right? Great attorney. He was one of the main litigators trying to enforce Brown v. Board of Education. He worked in the Justice Department, and he spent over 15 years of life before doing that, before going to Harvard. And he came to the conclusion that the racism was so overwhelming that it was an impossible feat. And he wrote a book called Sacred Covenants, I believe.
Yes.
In which he argued that Brown v. Board of Education, this is like, you know, absolutely sacrilege in liberal circles, was wrongly decided because you couldn't actually build the power. The courts were not strong enough to force desegregation. And therefore, what it should have said is, remember, it overturned Plessy versus Ferguson, the 1898 decision that said that segregation's okay, separate but equal, turned down someone who had sued over the segregated public transit in New Orleans in the late 19th century, because it would certainly seem to have violated the 14th Amendment. He said they should have affirmed Plessy, separate but equal, and conclude the equal part of the doctrine was being violated and enforce it rigorously. So if you did that, what you'd say is Milwaukee public schools and kids have to have as much spent on them and have as much resources as kids in the suburbs and anywhere else in the state. Otherwise, it's a violation of the Constitution. That might be the better solution, Earl, but we need a consensus. We need organized groups to have a consensus and then push for whatever it is or whatever combination of housing desegregation, school segregation. But what is not acceptable is we're back to 1965. It's like there was no civil rights movement. It's like there's still Jim Crow, Earl, but the same. And no one's even saying anything about it. Do you think it'll come up in the governor's race?
No,
I doubt it.
Well, no. So, you know, Dr. Craig, I have to say this. You know, Blacks make up 5-6% of the state of Wisconsin. And so to think that there's going to be something that takes place in the legislature in the state of Wisconsin that is going to change or address what is going on in the city of Milwaukee and people of color at this juncture in my life, you know, ironically speaking, it ain't going to happen. So for us to believe that people in the state legislature are going to be willing to address this in a righteous manner, it's just not going to happen. And so, you know, I'm not an optimist when it comes to thinking that in a state where, again, a group only makes up 6% of the state population, that there's going to be a coming to Jesus moment. I've kind of given up hope on that.
Well, I think it could happen.
You do.
It might be different. I think the opportunity is what could be built in the resistance to Donald Trump and authoritarianism to rethink our whole democracy. I think that this is, as dangerous as it is, it's an opening, because part of the reason we haven't dealt with segregation in the schools is because we had a Democratic politics that just put it off to the side, so it wasn't
an
issue.
That's true.
Right? And so this, it doesn't, it, there's no, it won't necessarily happen, but there's an opportunity if enough people will get involved to make this kind of thing happening. I'll give you even a little bit, a little tidbit of hope here. This is a part of Wisconsin history that is amazingly not known, right? I think people would say that the, if they were asked, that the biggest progressive thing that happened in the 20th century in Wisconsin was the protest against Act 10 about taking away union rights. But that was, that didn't succeed. And we haven't won yet, right? What people don't know is that there is only one legislature in the history of the United States, as a state legislature or Congress, that has ever passed a fully funded universal healthcare plan that guaranteed healthcare to everyone and had funding. And that was the Wisconsin State Senate in 2007 under Majority Leader Judy Robson, a nurse. And I was involved, a number of us were involved in creating the push for that, pushing into elections, making it a huge election issue, upon which Democrats took back the Senate, and the bill was written, and it had funding, and it was passed in the Senate, and it held up the state budget for 4 months because Scott Jensen, it was a Republican assembly, wouldn't sign on, but also the Democratic governor, Jim Doyle, wouldn't sign on. It was called Healthy Wisconsin, Earl. So that is an example of, you can actually organize the politics, even in this era, to do something like that, just that we did, we needed the governor, and we needed the state assembly. But that's a, that, that you wouldn't have think that would be possible, and that Wisconsin, California hasn't done this, Vermont, New York. No other state has achieved passing that kind of bill in any house of any legislature. In Congress, I was present in 2008, I think it was 18 or 19, the first time Congress ever even held a bill on a hearing on Medicare for All. In other words, they'd never had a hearing up until 2019. And in fact, Nancy Pelosi was unhappy the hearing was being forced, and she put it in the smallest hearing room in the Capitol. And so I was there, I had one of the few seats, and there were camera people from the national media all in our laps trying to force their way into this, you know, violating all the fire code toads hearing, because number of people in into this tiny hearing room to hear the only hearing ever held on a single, on Medicare for All in the history of Congress.
You know, Dr. Craig, I will say this. You and I both know Bob Peterson. Bob Peterson is a former Milwaukee school board president, but he's also the former president of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association. Longtime education guy, basically spent his entire adult life in Milwaukee public schools. Here's what he had to say. This problem must be addressed. A former Milwaukee school board member who was a new MPS teacher in the years after the court order and activist in the desegregation movement. That's how far back he goes. And he said, a wide body of research shows racially and economically diverse schools can benefit all students. Boosting test scores, reducing dropout rates, and narrowing achievement gaps. If we were to seriously address the issues of hypersegregation in schools in a metropolitan area, it would be an improvement for all students academically and socially, Peterson said. At the time of the court order, about 60% of MPS students were white, and that's 1976. And 34% were black. The Milwaukee Journal reported in 1976, today about 50% of Milwaukee public students are black. More than 25% are Hispanic or Latino, 10% are Asian, and about 9% are white, according to state data. That 9% that are white go to the cream of the crop schools that are in Milwaukee public schools, Dr. Craig.
I know. My three nephews went to Rufus King, to Golda Meir, and to the immersion school,
yes,
the School of Language.
But
they're three white kids.
The Milwaukee Public Schools has a cachet of schools that can measure up almost anywhere. But guess what? That's where teachers' children go. That's where, again, professionals, children go, but the average everyday rank and file family and parent, they don't get that. So if you look at the test scores overall in Milwaukee Public Schools, and you take the Ronald Reagan school and Golda Meir and Rufus King and the School of Language, the Schools of Languages, if you take them out and their scores, Dr. Craig, we're almost talking about total failure. In all the masses of the schools. It is an amazing, go ahead.
Because we should keep those schools, but improve it for everyone else, because those schools are truly integrated and have a lot of black and brown kids. My nephew Elijah, his three best friends, two are black and one is Puerto Rican.
Yes.
Right. And the four of them run around, and they're in their 20s now, but they run around as a pack, but it was the most integrated pack you can imagine. And that benefits all of them as far as knowing each other's families and being prepared. That's what Bob Peters talked about in part. You're better prepared for life if you've actually worked in come up in diverse settings, go to diverse schools. I went to Oak Park Elementary Schools and High School in the Illinois area. It was the first community in the country with open housing. Now, it was such, though, in middle class and upper middle class black families could afford to move in, but I went to integrated schools, which is a lot of white kids who don't really struggle when they then later in life end up in more integrated contexts. They don't understand and know other people in their cultures, know how to relate to them.
You know, Dr. Craig, I wouldn't have had it any other way growing up in segregated grade school, but my middle school and high school experience in those integrated schools, albeit forced integration, helped shape the person that I am today. And being able to have interacted and been around people other than people of color gave me an opportunity to kind of do the things that I do now. Some of my friends from middle school and high school are white, and they're still friends today. There's so much to be gained from that, Dr. Craig. And I guess if people really understood, they'd have to have been engaged in it and involved in it to understand the value of it, right? The segregation is not a positive thing for the growth and development of a human being. We don't live in a segregated world, right? I mean, we're all human beings. And so we all have the same thing in common, Dr. Craig. We're human beings. It's just like people right now, this assault on people who are not heterosexual. Well, they're not like we are. We've got to point them out and make it clear to them they're not equal to who we are. Well, what kind of insanity is that? That's a part of what the poison in our nation, Dr. Craig, that is rearing its head right now as it relates to people who are other than heterosexual. What does it matter to a person what somebody else's preference is? I thought, Dr. Craig, in America, people supposedly had choices to live the way they wanted to live. I thought that was what separated our nation, Dr. Craig, and made it special.
Yeah, and it's frankly, because I think science does matter, it's flat earthism as far as human sexuality. The Kinsley reports in the 1940s showed that that gender is a spectrum, and there's not these solid two blocks, the women and the men, right? So it just tries to impose some sort of arbitrary standard from the past onto everyone. It's a form of oppression, and it occurs partly because elites and leaders, and I include the corporate leaders who benefit from these politicians, find a way to divide and conquer, right? And it works to say, look at this abomination, look at this terrible group of people that is fill in the blank, and then organize people that way. And that's a bait and switch, because then you don't really represent them. You know, the fascinating thing about all the a lot of the rural areas in the United States that are represented by MAGA members of Congress, that most of those members of Congress, this has been looked at, know very little about rural policy and rural affairs. And that's not what they're doing. They're just being cultural warriors in Congress, and they're not even serving their districts. But that's evil on their part. But I would say we've got to get, you know, reach out to people, inspire them, and get them to see that, right? See that they're essentially being exploited, that they're taking bias in our society. And all of us have bias. The question is whether we're open to understanding it and trying to address it, right? And so I think that we need to create a new politics that that reveals and removes such people from leadership. But right now we have some people who have gotten ahead that way and are going to keep playing that trick and playing that card until as long as they can get away with it to hold power.
You know, Dr. Craig, what it does point out, and I've said this for a long time, the divide in our nation, if those people who have divided themselves from others really understood that we're all in the same boat, you know, people of color, people whose gender may be different, gender preferences may be different. People who, you know, Dr. Craig, struggle economically in the society, rural people who live in rural areas, people who live in urban areas, we're the majority, right? We are all the majority. We're the ones who can change the dynamic and the direction of this nation. If we just open our eyes and say, and put away our prejudices and put all those things on the side, because after it's all said and done, I don't want to use the term enemy, but there clearly is a group of people whose money they value above human beings, Dr. Craig. They've gotten to a point where they don't even see themselves as, you know, being a part of humanity because of their wealth. And their wealth has made them sick, Dr. Craig, sick from the perspective of not even realizing and recognizing another human being. They're not on this planet alone, Dr. Craig, but their numbers are growing. What, 960 now billionaires? If you went back 20 years, there might have been 50. Or if you went back 40 years, there were 50 of them. And this continues to grow, Dr. Craig, but it's shameful that 1,000 people who have $1 billion should somehow be able to have control over 340 million people.
It's a democracy problem, Earl.
Okay.
In other words, they've been allowed the last 50 years to rig the economy. I don't believe, unless you want to make the contrary argument, Earl, that we just gotten a lot more heroic rich people who have created more wealth than generations of the past,
right,
and just need all these excesses. No, they've got a hold of our government and our economy, and they've rigged it in their favor. They, because of those resources, they have much more than one person, one vote, right? They can spew out massive propaganda on social media, in campaign ads, everywhere else, attacking marginal and vulnerable people like trans teens,
right,
in order to hold on to power. So it just makes it harder, but we need to build the power to take power away from them. And as you know, in the post-World War II era, very rich people paid a much higher percentage of their income back to everyone,
yes,
else, so we could fund great schools and have free college and move towards universal health care. We need to do that again, but we need to take power back. It's not about making a moral argument that will make Elon Musk say, oh, you're right, I need to become a big philanthropist and stop this. No, he, as long as he is able to do it, he's going to do it. And we know that is the nature of human evil, that it is both perennial. There are people that will take advantage, And in fact, it's at some level in all of us that we have to address it, and we have to lean into the love and goodness in all humans in order to build community and build power together to create the kind of society that we can still have. I mean, Earl, we're not some society that has very limited resources and life's going to be poor no matter what. This is the wealthiest country in the history of the world. The sky's the limit as far as what kind of life we could create for most people in this society if we built the power to create that. But we need more people staying together, not everyone, just enough people in order to shift the balance of power, and then to force the people we elect, in fact, elect people who want to do this in the first place, to have the greatest era of achievement and progress in American history. That is all possible. We have the resources to do it. We just need the will and the willingness to fight together and the love to do it.
You know, Dr. Craig, I think the more I talk with people and the more they've checked out of politics, and they don't even want to hear anything about it, right? There's nothing I can do about it. I talk to people who should know better. They're educated. And even some who are living pretty decently. And I mentioned, I don't want to talk about that, right? Well, you have to talk about it, right? If you think because of where you live high on a hill, that the person who lives down on the ground is not somebody who you should be concerned about, that's part of the problem, Dr. Craig. And it used to be a time, I guess, when spirituality, I guess, at some point in time used to have and play a role in people's lives, where people would go to church on Sunday and maybe if for nothing more than what they got during Sunday morning service would reconnect with something other than the rest of those things. But people aren't going to church anymore, Dr. Craig. People aren't buying into any of those things anymore.
Well, I think that, I mean, things are changing, right? It is a more secular society. By the way, a lot of the Christian nationalist churches are growing. So that's danger when the spiritual yes. power is on the wrong side and on the right side. But you have leaders like the U.S. Senate candidate James Tallarico in Texas that are running on Christian values from a liberal perspective, for example, very effectively, just for example. But I think that people doing the right thing and coming together, that's a form of faith, that is a form of spiritual power. In other words, there were people involved in the civil rights movement that were behind Dr. King who might not have been churchgoers or believers, but True. They were connected. And that is, in many ways, building towards a radically equitable society, right, is the most religious thing one can do, whether one calls it religion or not, and whether it goes to a church. And we've got to admit, a lot of churches, I've talked to ministers who throw their hands up because their congregations won't do anything in terms of social justice. And they just want the ritual of going to the church, right? And social parts of it, and don't see any obligation to their faith. So, but there are some churches that are the opposite and pushing in the right direction, but it doesn't have to come from within the churches.
You know, Dr. Craig, I love interacting with you and your wisdom and your way of communicating I talk with a lot of people. I've interviewed a lot of people. You are without question my favorite. So it's always great talking to you. It's always therapeutic. I can totally get frustrated in reading an article like the one that's in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And it's not just so much because I'm reading it. I'm still in the schools 3 to 4 days a week. I see it, right? I live in the neighborhood, in the community where I see it, the outcomes of those things. And that's why I get a bit frustrated. But you always offer some balance, and balance is always good.
Well, always great to talk to you, Earl, and congratulations. We didn't talk about Greenland, Venezuela, Trump weighing strikes on Iran, Vance about the leadership to visit Denmark. I mean, you know, but that's all that crazy show is a symptom of the deeper things we talked about. So we talked about the real underlying deep causes of this and the deep solutions to this. and there's limits to just we kind of fall into their trap if we just follow every crazy thing they're doing every day, and that's all we do.
Dr. Craig, thank you very much. Look forward to talking again on next week. That's a wrap. Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action on what's going on with Earl Ingram.